You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. He was sick earlier in the week. We're going to find out what's his deal right now. Joining me from the great state of Texas, his adopted birthland, Michael Musselman. Gunner, what is up? How are you? How are you feeling? You okay?
I was until that last statement, and then you have to go and do that again.
What did I do?
My adopted...
What do you call it?
This is the state I live in, the state I reside in.
Okay, the state, the great state of Texas.
You gotta keep pushing, you keep pushing.
The state that he resides in. Okay.
Yeah,
I'm okay.
The state that I pay taxes in, the state I own a home in, the state I have, you know, you keep going and going and going.
Well, I know, but I won't even say it. Okay, so...
think about this. I was in the Marine Corps for 31 years.
Yeah?
Right?
Sure, devil.
I lived in Minnesota for, I think, 12 years.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Other than being a child.
Yes.
And developing me as who I am, because I'm not the same person as I was in high school.
No, I think you might be.
Believe me. I was a bad person in high school.
How so?
Well, not so really. But I just didn't care about, you know, other people's feelings and shit like that.
Mike told the story about running from the police when he was in high school. And
I wasn't in high school when I ran from, but it was junior high.
And he's in a car, and they shut all the lights.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That wasn't running. That was evading.
They shut all the lights off in the car.
But I had my foot on the brake. I know, man. That is like, dude, believe me. If you could take back one thing in your life, that would be one of them. And you know what, though? I didn't get a ticket. Because you know why? The cop felt sorry for me. He's probably going, man, this guy's not operating on all, you know,
on all cylinders.
But he came up, and he was like, he's like, man, that's the funniest thing I've ever seen. He goes, you know, you would have got away. But you had your foot on the brake. And then, of course, you got to take the ribbing of everybody, you know, when you're leaving. Because all your buddies, they're scared. They're all shit-talking afterwards. Shit. Like, shut up.
anybody could have made that mistake.
No, that's not true. I mean, shit. You know, you're a high school student. The only basic training that you've ever had driving is on the movies. Right?
Now,
I know you can say, well, you shouldn't be evading the police in the first place.
Of course you should be. Come on.
But it was the first thing that came into my mind. When I passed, you know, I was like, holy shit, you ain't catching me. And it was a perfect... It was a real high hill. It was like a saddle in the road, you know?
Right.
And we were going up the hill, coming into the saddle, when we had just passed, and then I saw him hit his light. So I'm in the downhill of the saddle. He's going in the downhill of the behind me into the saddle. So he's got to turn around, come up the hill again, and then down. So it was like perfect opportunity. Wooded area in Minnesota, dark out, a lot of trees in the yards. And so driveway right there. In I go, but take the foot off the pedal.
This
would have been a perfect getaway, you know, like, shit, people would have been talking about that forever.
Forever. Yeah, Musselman. Hey, do you remember the
time?
They're
still talking about it, too, though. That's even funnier. I mean, it's not as funny as...
It's a better story.
You know, it's not...
It's a better story, without a doubt.
So, I never told you this story about... You know, you go through your whole life, and there's sometimes where the story kind of comes out better because it was different. It wasn't what you expected, right? the normal expectation. So let me tell you a story real quick, and I don't know if I told you this, but this is actually a really good story. This is about Ron and Ralph.
Oh, I love Ron and Ralph.
Yeah. Yeah, so one day, Ron and Ralph and I were on a petroleum club enjoying an exquisite lunch at the petroleum club, membership only. It's one of those, hoity-doity type clubs. And so we're at the petroleum club, and they're talking about going on this buffalo hunt. So we start talking about, this buffalo hunt, and Ron and Ralph are going to go shoot this buffalo. Well, there's only one buffalo, and they're not going to shoot. So they come up with a plan that they're going to go out there, and they're going to dress up. They're going to play the part. They're going to go out there with their old 1800 buffalo guns, the 45-70s or, the big guns that the cowboys used to shoot buffaloes back in the day with.
Right, the big guns.
And so Ron goes a step further. So he's got his buffalo jacket, like Buffalo Bill with the tassels down the sleeve and everything.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So I look at Ralph and I said, they said, well, we're going to both line up on this buffalo, and then we're going to have some count of three, and we're going to shoot this buffalo. And I just looked at Ralph, and I said, Ralph, you should shoot on two. And Ron immediately jumps like, no, damn it, that's, and we start talking about it. And so I kept telling Ralph, Ralph, listen to me, trust me. If you don't shoot on two, it's just going to be another buffalo story. But if you shoot on two, man, that story will live forever. So we kind of forget about it. The hunt comes, and another friend goes with them to videotape everything. So they got on the phone, and I'll send it to you, and it's hilarious, dude. But so they're jockeying around, and this is not like a buffalo hunt. This is more like a buffalo killing, because these things are almost as tame as you can get them. They're almost coming up to get food out of your hand. And it's just a call, so they need to call the herd a little bit. So Ralph and Ron are out there, and they're lining up on the shot, and Ron's trying to get in position. So all of a sudden you hear Bob in the background go, okay, one, two, boom, on two. The buffalo goes dropping to the ground. And Ron just launches, like, what the heck? And everybody, dude, there's probably five other people there, are laughing so hard they can't even get words out. All in the meantime, this buffalo's, laying on its side. And then Ron delivers the coup de grace to it and kills it. But that story gets out about how Ron and Ralph, beautiful buffalo hunters, they're getting out there to go shoot a buffalo. And then they go, one, two, and Ralph shoots on two. Boom, drops the buffalo. And Ron just launches, like, what the hell? And so I'm at Walmart one day, right? And this is, probably about a week or a month after the hunt. And I'm at Walmart, and there's these two gentlemen in front of me, and I don't know. And they're talking, and they're talking about something. And all of a sudden he goes, hey, did you hear about those two gentlemen trying to hunt that buffalo up there towards Jacksboro or out by Stephenville? Yeah, the fella shot on two. And I started laughing so hard. And then I went, I think it was Ralph's youngest daughter, Kim, got Ralph and Ron, got them a picture of them, sitting by the buffalo with the dress. And it says, they had it engraved on top like this wooden frame. It says, one, two, bang. So it's become like a legend, like a story that continues to go on and gets laughter. Because you're imagining it going, man, that's funny as hell. I would have never thought of that.
It is funny.
And so there's times in your life that when things didn't go the way you expected them, they're actually more memorable and more entertaining to maybe other people than yourself, like the getaway in Minnesota. But, but they're still entertaining nonetheless.
Oh, they are. I'll tell you, Craig Corsi used to tell a story. Did you ever hear him tell the story about the first time? Craig Corsi is a retired first sergeant. He owns a hunting lodge up in Maine now.
Yeah, you told us this last time around.
But he tells this story about going to the pistol range, and he'd never been there, and somebody got sick on qual day, so they said, hey, Sergeant Corsi, you want to go? And he didn't shoot any qualifying, so he doesn't know the course of fire, none of it. So, for whatever reason, right? He thinks the rapid fire is the first event, and he has it in his head. So he's standing up there, and he's got like a female Marine on his left, and he's like, you know, I've never done this, and I want to qualify expert, but you know, she can do it, I can do it, right? Cranking his neck around, making sure he's good and loose. And when they say targets, you know, the slow fires were like,
and then two minutes later, another shot.
So they say targets, and with that, he fires.
He unloads every round in the gun.
But
and I think he reloads and shoots again, right?
Yeah, because the magazine changed, right? It's a big deal.
So right. He's thinking magazine change.
And so, but he's telling this story. And then he says he gets done, right? Makes a safe weapon, benches it, and looks. He says everybody on the range is looking at him. He's looking at him. And, like,
the first thought in his head was, holy shit, man, I'm really good.
I did it. I made it.
Yeah, these guys are looking at me like out of envy.
Oh,
I wish it could be me.
It is one of the funniest stories with him telling it that you've ever heard. He's the same guy who took out the $6,000 loan before he went to Ramadi.
He wasn't going to make it back to war.
Right. And at first you think about it, it's like that's so stupid. And then you think about it like, no, it's not. He's single guy. Like, who cares? And you know what? He might not make it back.
Until you get back and you start making payments on it.
Then it's not so funny.
And you're like, yeah.
It's not so funny.
Humor goes away.
But we sure had a pretty good time with that. With that, this $6,000 was a pretty good time. Yeah, he's like buying plane tickets for his buddies. I can't go to Pittsburgh for the weekend. Yeah, you can.
What?
How about a plane ticket?
How about I... Lisa, Learjet, and we all just...
Yeah,
I'll pick everybody up.
Yeah, he'd do stuff like rent a limo for he and his squad mates.
Yeah.
They're rolling around Jacksonville in a limo. Anyway, but it's funny stuff. I had something else. Have you seen since the election in Alabama, have you seen all the people on TV like trying to decide like why Roy Moore lost?
What they're trying to spin this around too is this is starting the downfall of the Trump empire.
Right.
You know, if Trump can't get a guy elected, then all hell, you know. You're like, what?
And I'm listening. First of all, the biggest story is that in an election where there's 1.3 million votes cast, okay, he loses by 21,000 votes. After all the shit that came out about that guy, he still almost won. To me, that's the biggest story, is that he almost wins.
But the Secretary of State still has to ratify it. They're waiting on all these...
He conceded this morning.
He did?
Okay. He did.
I wouldn't have conceded, man. I would have held on forever.
I burned it down. You know what? Yesterday was the anniversary of Al Gore's concession over the hanging chad. Remember that? The ballots are in a vehicle.
Yeah.
It's on I-95 now in Florida. And remember the helicopter shots? That has the ballots that will decide. You're like, are you kidding me? And the hanging chads. But it's like, let me figure out. It's a Republican state, and this guy's had 9 women come out and accuse him of some type of sexual either harassment or assault when they were young, and we're wondering why he didn't win the election
by 21.
And that's like, why do you think he doesn't win in Alabama?
I think it was decided by like a tenth of a percent or something.
When
you win by that much, dude, you got to do some soul searching too.
Yeah, but again, it's like, geez, why? What does this mean? It means the people, even the people in Alabama, aren't okay with electing a guy with that kind of baggage. Okay,
that, right.
There's the big lesson. But you know what? That doesn't fill up all the time on TV, so you got to fill it up. The text message from somebody in Texas: Musselman is a lying MF. The Petroleum Club is a effing gas station. Now let me just tell you, all you third hour people, okay? Stop using the F word. Didn't you hear Mike's lecture?
Yeah, that's Buck. If it's Buck, then he's throwing that word around this early in the morning. That's definitely Buck.
What is wrong with you? Didn't any of you guys hear? I know Mike doesn't heed his own words, but didn't the rest of you stop using the F word?
I stopped. I haven't said it all today.
There you go. There you go. Do you know? Hey, do you know Mike Etor?
Yes, E-Tools.
Yeah.
No, E-Tool.
Mike E-Tor. He was on a little bit ago. We were talking about leadership in the Marine Corps. And kind of interesting. He has a leadership consulting business. And he said, I just go around and teach accountability and leadership 101 with people that. But, you know, one of the interesting things, Mike, is that we were talking about is the computer now will destroy you. You have this impression that you go to work, you go into your office, and then you fight. You go to meetings and you do work on your computer.
Right.
And that never used to be the way the Marine Corps was, right? You're a battalion commander or a company commander, right? You get up at 4:30 in the morning. You get into work by 5:30. You check your calendar. What's going on? You and your first sergeant walk over to chow. When you walk over to chow, you walk through the company area. You make sure everything's going right. You come back, you know, formation's getting ready to go. You walk by, you say hey to everybody, right? Then, you know, maybe, you know, and you inspected. You got out and you looked at stuff. And you did stuff.
Right.
And now, and so he made some interesting points about, you know, all these things suck you away from that which is most important, which is getting out there and being seen by, you know, your Marines. That's how we used to do it. And it seems to me that there's all these things that are way more important now that go on in that computer. And we've convinced ourselves that that's a full work day. When I get in at 6, I work on my computer all day.
That's a full work day.
Right. I don't even go to the chow hall. I'll probably go out and PT, so I might go to the gym. I probably don't walk around my company area. Even as a company commander, and that's what it is. And he said, you know, somehow or other, the culture's got to change. And, Mike, here's another thing he said. He said, and one other thing I'd like to see Neller address is you should be able to tell the truth on readiness reports.
Like I said, the only guy that I remember ever telling the full truth as a battalion commander was Steve Linder.
Told the truth?
At First OER. Huh?
Well, yeah, but he could, though, right? Because you're an independent battalion. If he was part of an LAR regiment.
No, it cost him his career.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. He never picked up.
Colonel?
He was done after that. You know, because basically what you're saying is, you know, hey, I inherited a piece of crap and I need help.
Right.
And, but you know what? If it wouldn't have been for Linder's that moral courage, you know, because that takes a lot, man. It takes a lot of C4 in not even in combat, in peacetime,
C4. Yeah, yeah. Explain to everybody what C4 is.
Well, so there's a rating in readiness, and everything comes into it, you know, like parts on order, vehicles up, you know, everything. All of this percentage, and it comes out to a percentage, and basically. And I don't remember if there's a letter, the letter changed, but in a C4 basically shows that you're non-mission capable and non-combat capable. So you cannot be, you have to be taken off the force list if the flag goes up. And for a unit to be taken off, basically the, you know, request, the, what is the RFI?
Yeah.
Or, yeah. Basically taken off of a pool of vehicles or a pool of units that can respond to a contingency because you're not combat capable because of all these others. Dude, that's a red star cluster, man. That's seen all the way from D.C., you know, when you shoot that thing up in California. And that's exactly what happened.
But even though it's – and let me tell you, it's the truth. And ETOR was talking about, well, yeah, that one can't get in the air. That one can't get in the air. That one can't get in the air. But we're not going to deadline them, because if we went to combat, we'd cannibalize that one, which would then bring those three up.
Then cannibalization, because you couldn't cannibalize a vehicle. It was basically
right.
against the law. You
right.
couldn't take parts up another one to make another one fix.
Right.
And if you got caught doing that, that was an NJP.
Right.
You were busted, man. That was in an LER at that time, man. That was like the cardinal sin.
But you know his point, Mike. Guys wouldn't, you know, report deadline stuff because they would say, because look, we're not going to report it. And technically, if we got the order to go tomorrow, we'd cannibalize that vehicle, which would put this one up. Yeah. And so they're only down in a reporting criteria, and we don't really report that. And you're sitting there, and
you
that's,
know what?
And that's
we'll tow these vehicles in the combat. What?
And that's the MMO telling you how the world is, because if we reported the truth, and this was Etor's point.
That's ugly.
Yeah, if you report the truth,
that's ugly.
Yeah.
No one, and this goes back to the simple factor. Even me and my wife had this conversation years ago, and so she gets it now. She does not. But she doesn't do this anymore. But she'll say something like, "Hey, I need you to ask a question." I said, "Okay, what?" So she asked me a question. I said, "You want the truth?" And she looks at me like, "Of course, stupid. Why would I ask you and I'd not get the truth?" And I said, "Okay." I told her the truth, and she's like,
"Do I look fat in this?" Right?
No.
How does my hair look? And you don't even look, you just say it looks great. And then they say, why didn't you look at it? It's like, and then that's
because
what
I'm not
do you,
give you the truth.
Yeah, if I tell you the truth, you're gonna get pissed at me. Right?
Yeah.
Do you wanna
you look
know
like the guy on Dumb and Dumber?
Yeah, do you wanna know if you look fat? Go in the bathroom, turn on every light in the bathroom, okay? And then take off all your clothes. And then you look, and you come back, and you tell me if you look fat. Don't. I'm not going there.
Don't put
this on me. Yeah, don't put it on me, because you're just going to get mad at me, and all I would do would be honest with you.
Yeah.
And then, then you have that question, then you say that, and you're like, and then you get this. So you think I'm fat.
Well, Mac, we're talking about this. Honesty is not rewarded in the Marine Corps.
Right.
Honesty is not rewarded in the military, period. Because if you're honest, then they're branded as a bitch or a whiner.
Right.
Oh, yeah, you're just whining.
No, those guys.
Oh, you're just bitching.
Right, those guys.
You know? Yeah. And so, but you know what? It kind of goes back into what I used to do, is I didn't give a shit what you thought of what I said. Because what I'm saying is not about, at the end of the day, I didn't benefit as personally from the shit that I've come up with. It was for the other guys. It was for Marines. And you may have gotten pissed off about it, and you may have thrown a temper tantrum, but when you calmed down, you did it. Because you knew it was the right thing to do.
Right.
But so, if you get over that, and you know, and one of the greatest things, that, you know, like I said, Larry Nicholson was a great guy to finish my career with. You know, and working with Dave Furness was a great opportunity, but, because Dave was the same way. Dave came to me, you know, basically said, I want somebody to tell me, after everybody tells me everything's great, I need someone to kick me in the balls. But not only kick me in the balls, but then give me an answer. How are we going to fix this? Or, don't kick me in the balls at all, just go fix it.
Right.
And so, you know, that's right. He never put me on a leash and allowed me out to go anywhere and do anything under his name. And fix anything that I saw needs to be fixed. And then, you know, the neat thing about it was I never came back to him and go, oh, you know, hey, sir, I did this and I did this and I did this and I did this. No. Not at all. And, you know, the only stuff that he saw was when we turned in results, and I came to him and said, "Hey, the Marines, the squad leaders are saying this is going on in the, you know, in the AO," and he used to piss him off. You know, remember that time when Dave was, he'd go out and tell him something, and then we'd come back afterwards and say, "They're not listening to you." Well, shit, they're not listening to me. I'm the colonel. No, they're not, because here, this is what the squad leaders are saying. And man, he gets so freaking, and I said, you know, same thing. And it was kind of like the commandant when we were talking about marksmanship, and Will did this indirectly, but he said, you know, if it meant so much in just for the word commandant, Marines would do it anyway. Because you don't, if it's the commandant's directive, you got it, you know, it's an order, but no one followed the order. So then no one respected your position. And when the commandant kind of read the writing between the, you know, everything in the, was going on, then he got pissed. Why aren't they following my orders? Because they don't care. And this is about marksmanship.
Right.
It was something to do with reporting and marksmanship. But at the end, they didn't care. So it's not important to them. You know, telling the truth is not important. What's important is the number game. It's
right.
The reports that go out.
Right.
You know, when you file all these reports, it's having things not on order for more than excess of 180 days, because then division sees that.
Right. That gets you on a different list.
Yeah. You know, why do you have a transmission on order for 181 days? I don't know. I don't make transmissions. That should be your answer. Yeah, you jackass. Why don't you do your job and help me get it instead of pointing out my deficiency?
Mike, let me read you an email. Mac, I think one of the things that is hard to do for general officers is get to the truth. You told a story once about General Dunford while he was doing battlefield circulation saying the hardest thing is just to show up and get people to talk to you. They want to put on the PowerPoint presentation. They want to do a dog and pony for you show. And in order for you to solve problems, you have to know what the truth is. And it's the hardest thing for a general officer to find. I think what Mike's talking about here is, hold on, let me just finish this thought. The hardest thing for a general officer is to put mechanisms in place or people in place that will bring him the bad news on a consistent basis so he can fix it. Some will do that, some will not. Your thoughts?
Yeah, and luckily, all the ones I work for did that.
Yeah, you know, when we were, and honestly, the great part about our group that went to Afghanistan, there was, most of the guys that were there were not afraid to look you in the face and tell you the truth. They were, and
right.
they're good leaders. And we had more of them on that staff than I've ever seen before, you know, and Mike was a big part of it. And I was a big part of it because I watched what went on every day. And when I'd see things that weren't right, my first move would always be to go get Mike and say, "Hey, can you pull this string and find out if this is good or bad?" And then Mike would, you know, whether it be a post-blast analysis and details relative to that, or whether it be something that people were doing that Furness had told them specifically not to do. And then, you know, Furness would get it right in the face. "Hey, man, they're blowing you off." And you know what? But you, again, as you get higher in an organization, it gets so much more difficult to affect people's behavior because the organization gets bigger.
Well, it gets harder to find the truth.
Yeah, right.
The truth becomes more elusive the higher you get in an organization.
And I'll tell you what,
it's camouflaged and it you know, acts differently.
And I thought, I learned watching General Mattis, I learned a ton, as I think anybody would. But, you know, as you become a division commander, you can't affect every battalion. But he had a reputation
right.
that he did not tolerate bullshit from officers in particular well. And
but see, you're talking about someone who could influence leadership by just the simple fact of chaos is on the move. I say again, chaos is on the move. Leadership potential would skyrocket across the battlefield because you never knew when he was going to show up. So whenever the radio call went out, chaos is on Oscar Mike, chaos is Oscar Mike. Shit, everybody was like, "Whoa, okay, clean this place up, clear the fields of fire, put your aiming stakes up, you know, put bunker, let's have more sandbags here, put another layer of this. And so it was kind of just that simple fact, we were good, because if chaos showed up at your paws and it was never announced, and he showed up at some of the most obscure, you know, six-man fighting holes, basically on top of a rooftop in the middle of Ramadi, he'd just pop in one day and go, you know, what's going on, boys? And people running out the hair on fire.
I was Alpha Company First Recon came to Ramadi in 2004, and they were running around doing some stuff in civilian clothes. And he was worried about him. And I was in a meeting with him. I set up a meeting with them, and he wanted to meet with their officers and all their NCOs and staff NCOs. And he got him in his room, his conference room, and he just sat down. He walked in, and he loves being around Marines. He loves being around junior Marines. If you watch him walk in and see junior Marines, he gets a shit-eating grin on his face. And he loves to hear them talk shit, and he loves their stupid stories. To him, that is an awesome day, being around those guys. That's the Marine Corps to him. Everything else he does is simply for those people because he loves them. And so the door shuts, and he looks around and goes, all right, I need to know what you guys are doing and if you're being safe out there, okay, because I'm hanging your ass out a little bit, and it's not going to work if you hang it out even more. So let's talk about communications. Let's talk about areas we're working in that I know that we have QRF coverage in. And let's talk about the discipline of you not straying outside that. And they sat down and, you know, they went around the table and it was really cool to see corporals talking to Major General Mattis and him look at them and say, well, you know, what do you think? Well, I don't think we can go there. Okay, let's get out the map, and they got to get out the map, and now they're talking, and I mean, he was in heaven, because you know this is the kind of information I need to make good decisions to make sure we're not doing stupid stuff and people aren't getting killed, you know, any more than we have to. But it's
Mattis would have been one of those guys who'd been happy to have been a squad leader his whole life, never be promoted,
right? Like the Brits do. You can stay there and be a squad leader until you retire.
In the Royal Marines, you could do 30 years. And what was your position in the Royal Marines? I was a squad leader. What? Yeah. There's nothing more honorable than that kind of job, man. And I look at those. What would you do for 30 years? I was a point man in the Royal Marine. I was a rifleman. What?
Yep.
Yeah.
I could. Yeah, brother. I could walk that point. I could. Oh,
dude,
I've got it.
That is awesome.
Hold on. Ammunition decision made by the Marine Corps. Stand by.
All right, hang on. Let me plug in my headset here.
Oh, my God. No, we got to have the headset.
Okay, go.
Hold on. Shit. The Marine Corps bought the M855 A1 ammunition.
Right. The biggest joke in the world.
Can you explain what it is? What the difference is from the M855? Is it 855 or 885?
855.
All right. So the M855 A1 has better.
It's the new round.
Is the new round. So what is the difference?
They're both POSs, so I don't know what really.
What's a TLS?
POS.
What's a POS? Oh, piece of shit?
Yeah.
Hold on. Quote, the M855A1 provides improved performance over current M55-556 round in a lead-free form factor and provides improved steel penetration, hard and soft target terminal effects with more consistent terminal effects than the M855.
What? Whoa, hold the horses.
At ranges out to 600 meters, according to?
The Army.
No, somebody by the name of, Chris Woodburn of the Marine Corps Combat Development Command.
Yeah, he's a civilian now.
Do you know Woodburn?
Yeah, I know Woodburn.
Does he speak the truth? You don't sound impressed.
I just think we were sold a bill of goods, and I'm not going to speak ill about a friend of mine, but I just think there was some bad things that went down with the M855A1 was an Army initiative. The reason we're going with it, and I think that what they don't want to admit is the fact that we couldn't afford to buy our own ammunition. And I understand that as a Marine Corps. We have to get on board with the Army's procurement program with the ammunition because of COCPA. You know, we as the military, we can't have, because we're brought to task with Congress all the time of why we have a different uniform, why we're different in this. Imagine trying to explain to Congress why we have a different ammunition, you know, bullet. And the Army, the M855A1 was a failed program that I don't think got really that much of a passing grade. The fact that, you know, they say it's lead free.
Yes.
Bullshit.
It's not.
It's got some lead in it. It doesn't have much. And to say that it's better than the old round, dude, that's like saying, you know, owning a 77 Volkswagen and then coming back and saying, you know, oh, I want to get a better car. Any car that you purchase, hell, you could buy a Pinto and it's better than a 77 Volkswagen.
I knew you were going to say Pinto. I knew it. Yeah. I'm sitting here thinking he's going to say Pinto.
Yeah, you could buy a 78 Gremlin and still have a better car than a 77 Volkswagen. So when you compare, oh man, my Gremlin is a lot better than that Volkswagen. No. No. That's what they're doing, Mac. The M855, I mean, there's airsoft bullets that are better than that thing. So, yeah, I find it kind of ridiculous, kind of silly.
All right. So how much of an effect, if we bought better ammunition, how much does that upgrade? The rifle?
Well, the better ammunition would have been something like the, you know, the AB, the SOS, the Special Operations Technology bullets, the stuff that we were using before, and just kind of refine that. You know, and they say, well, here's the argument, Mac. So the M855, the green tip bullet that we've had forever, right, was developed to defeat the Russians in the fall of the gap. Remember that exercise?
Yes, I do. Vividly.
So the fall of the gap was, if you're a military kind of person, is World War III, the onset of basically World War III, where that's where the Russians would have come across, through the gap into Europe, and
we would have had
to defend.
Yeah.
You know, that would have been like the Custer's last stand type of thing.
Yeah, nukes dropping, chemical weapons being fired. Yeah, it's all that.
World War III would have been determined right away after the fall of the gap. But because the Russians were going to be using body armor.
Yeah.
That, I mean, we knew that. Right. I mean, that was a given. The Russians were going to use body armor. So, right now, we're not fighting guys that wearing body armor. So that's what became the issue, was the fact that not so much, the bullet. It was trying to find something that could basically do the same thing that the 855 couldn't do. Again, comparison of Pinto to a Volkswagen.
You got it.
They're both pieces of shit.
Right.
One's just a little bit better. You know, a turd's a turd.
Right.
Even if it's painted or not.
Right.
It's still a turd. So, that's where we're at. And like I said, unless they change something drastically, the Army, because it was a big embarrassment when they first started down the path of buying a different round, because we had spent literally hundreds of thousands of dollars, and then within a year solved the problem to a new bullet, fielded the the Sost round, and that was the brown tip round that we had in combat. And the Army had spent tens of millions of dollars and were no closer to solving the problem. Because they had tried bismuth, which is heavier than lead, but then it didn't perform. And they tried all these lead-free alternatives, and then what they finally came out with was, let's just put less lead in it and more steel. So it's got a bigger steel penetrator and not as much lead. That's what they should be advertised as. Not lead-free, but not as much as lead is before. Kind of like Diet Coke. Not as much sugar as the old Coke. That's what this is. This round is Coke Zero, or is the Coke Zero answer.
The
how did that end for Coke?
It did not end well. I know that.
Yeah, didn't end well at all.
All right, hold on. Let me read you a little bit more of the story. Because there's more to it. In testing, the round caused some durability issues for the Marine Corps M27 infantry automatic rifle, according to Brigadier General Joe Schrader, Marine Corps SISCOM commanding officer. Right. Even though the M855A1 reduces the IAR's durability, the M27 is still operationally suitable when firing the Army rounds, Woodburn said. Neller is considering replacing M4 carbines in infantry squads with IARs. In February,
which Dirty did.
This is old news. In February, Mark 4 System Command expressed an interest to buy 11,000 weapons, meeting the IAR's requirements. So there you have it. There you have it. Okay, is the Petroleum Club really just a gas station?
So much more than that. Buck, don't listen to Buck. It's so much more than that. You know what? It's the company that you're in, right?
Oh, really? That makes it that way?
It can be the most exclusive club. Every time I go to Buckshop, I'm in the company of greatness.
I'll listen to you.
You know, to watch him make some of the best boots, man. I'm telling you, dude, you got to see some of the boots he's making. Oh my God. And it's not like you can go to Michael's and figure this out over the weekend and stuff. This is talent, man. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
He's an artist? Is that what you're telling me? Buck's an artist?
Yeah, but not that kind of artist.
Yeah, I've never heard of an artist named Buck.
Maybe now you should. And, you know, Buck always gives me, we always go back and forth over cowboys, right? You know, he's an old-time cowboy, but we were talking about shooting long distance or something like that. We were doing something, and he's like, oh, yeah, that's what they do now these days, these newfangled. But back in the old days, you know, in the cowboy days, they didn't shoot like that. And I said, yeah, you know, in the old days, the cowboys never did that stuff because that was only in movies. You know? And so we always go back and forth on that stuff, so I know he's always pulling my leg, trying to get a response.
You know, I have abstract art in my house. How about that?
What?
Yeah, exactly. I have one painting that's like 6 feet wide by 4 feet that's abstract. Yeah, so people think I'm really smart. And then I have another one in my living room that's maybe...
Really?
Yeah, maybe like 18 inches by 18 inches. But the reason I have them is because one of my vehicle commander, when I was a company commander, Lance Corporal Kevin Calhoun from North Carolina, good looking kid, could talk a lot of shit, which is why I liked him, and with golden hair, and he was funny, and he was also one of the social centers of gravity of the of the company, and I was not even the company commander. We were getting ready to go for a run by like at 6 a.m. at Lake Bandini, and everybody comes up and says, "Hey, Hoon," to this kid who's standing there smoking a cigarette. Everybody, staff NCOs, the lieutenants, "Hey, Hoon, what's up?" "Hey, staff sergeant, what's up? Gonna go for a run? You gonna call Cadence?" Staff sergeant smoking, getting ready to put a cigarette out and put it in his sock, right? So he could smoke it after the run. Yep, good and right. good coke cans the whole time. And so he was a gunner on an LEV-25, and I told him, you're going to come be my vehicle commander on the C Square. Oh, sir, you can't do that to me. I'm a gunner. I'm like, no, you're not. All right, you're going to work for me. And he was pissed. And then he got to have a lot of say in the company, and he liked it. But anyway, he's now an abstract artist. So people say, where did you get these? Like, one of my Marines. Abstract artist, Kevin Calhoun. You could look him up. But they think like, oh, you like abstract art? No. I look at that like I have no idea. It's like coloring gone wrong on a 24 square foot piece of canvas. What does it mean?
Right.
No idea. It's just like what he did. So I don't know why I told that. Oh, it's about being cultured. Yeah. A lot of people can be cultured. Good.
You know, that's called getting old when you tell a story and then you forget why you were telling the story.
You know what?
You are 60, dude.
Last night I played that Alexa thing you sent.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that funny as hell?
You know what? I should post it on Facebook and send it out on Twitter because it is funny. It's Mike, explain it, and then I'll let you go.
So it's a set on an ice skate over. It's called the Silver Edition Alexa for older people, you know, and because they forget shit, and it's so funny. Like, it'll respond to all the names possibly, like, hey, Alyssa, hey, Melissa, hey, Jalissa, hey, Steve. And then there's one part where, hey, Alexa, what's the temperature outside? It is currently 70 degrees outside. What? I said it's currently 70 degrees outside. What is the temperature? Why are you telling me to? Because why they asked in the first place? Oh, dude, it is one of those things.
It is funny. My kids even thought it was funny. And then one of them was like, how many people did Satchel Paige strike out last night? Satchel Paige is dead.
Died in 1989.
How many?
Well, how many did he?
How many?
How many?
He's dead.
He's
who?
Dead.
Who? Satchel Paige.
Well, I don't
dead?
Know about that.
He died in 1967. Satchel Paige dead. Damn, didn't know that. It is hilarious. Absolutely hilarious.
All you right. Gotta post that, dude.
That is no. Mike said it, and I played it, and I laughed my ass off. So anyway, yeah, 60. Can you believe that? That's like, God. I see that now, and I'm like, you got to be kidding me, man. What's up with 60? But such is life, man. I'm lucky to be here than I guess other places I could be. So I'm all right with it. All right, man. You have a good one.
All right, man. I'll talk to you later.
There you have it. The one and only Gunner here on a Thursday. Yeah. That's the wrong song. Here's the right song. All right. My thanks to Mike Etor for coming on this morning. Yeah, I screwed up my schedule. So my thanks to him for coming on. If you missed that, don't touch the dial. Etor is a smart guy. And what we focus, you know, it's kind of interesting. Conclusions. Right? Young people are no different today than they've ever been. All right? So what's different? What's different are the people that are supposed to create the structure and adhere to standards and lead young people. That's what's different. And that's where the crisis is. The young people will do whatever you train them to do, whatever you lead them to do. They'll do. We've seen it in combat. Just as heroic, just as tough. So, have a great day. This program repeats itself momentarily on a Thursday. All Marine Radio, over and out.